In many urban areas, coyotes have become our neighbors. Whether we realize it or not, these animals are all around us, and sadly, the narrative surrounding them is often very skewed. In this third and final episode with Dr. Stan Garrett, professor of wildlife ecology at Ohio State University, we chat about our role, the human role, that is, in coexisting with coyotes and how we can mitigate conflicts with them. Stay tuned until the end of the episode for a very special discount code for Stan's newest book, Coyotes Among Us. Let's jump right into episode 3. Welcome to the Wild Foundation podcast short format series, Conservation Capsule. Imagine being able to quickly take a capsule, a pill, a dose of something that helps you retain crucial insight in the realm of nature conservation. Well, we've got just that for you. Through our Conservation Capsule series, we're handing you the effective dosage of words of wisdom from the environmental world's best and brightest. Let's dive in. Okay, Stan, welcome back. This is episode 3 of 3, highlighting coyotes and the work that you do. If the wild ones have been following along, this is just so awesome. We've been learning all about coyotes, and now we're diving into kind of like how we have to adapt to having coyotes in our environment, we being humans, and why it's beneficial to us. Stan, please quickly, briefly introduce yourself. At this point, I feel like the wild ones know well who you are, but just in case we have any first-time listeners.
Sure. So I'm Stan Garrett. I'm a professor of wildlife ecology at Ohio State University, and I study mammalian carnivores mainly, including coyotes. That seems to be the big subject matter. And I'm especially focused on how they relate to us and how we relate to them.
I feel like I've learned so much from our conversations. So I'm really excited to hear what you have to say today, because, you know, we've chatted about this a little bit, this narrative that there's conflict between humans and coyotes and that these animals are coming into our space. But I really want to pick your brain here on how are we supposed to adapt to these animals coming into urban spaces, and why should we adapt? Like, why is it beneficial to us? Because I know that there is a reason.
So in terms of humans adapting, so we've been talking about how coyotes kind of adapt to us and how they are able to exploit that environment. So now we're kind of flipping the script a little bit, and now we're focusing on how do we adjust to the presence of these animals, or should we, and try to adjust? And so with coyotes are unique in a lot of ways, and one of the ways that they're really unique is that we don't really have the ability to control their numbers the way we can with other wildlife species. So we've tried to exterminate them in different parts of the country, and we've always failed. And in fact, in the face of tremendous persecution across North America, coyotes have thrived, and they've increased their numbers, and they've spread across the eastern part of the continent. Now they're going farther north. They're actually going farther south. They're probably going to be in South America at some point, or they may be there already. So the biggest adjustment, of course, is them moving into the cities. That was the last remaining habitat for them. And the lesson there is that we probably do have to adjust to their presence, because our lack of adjustment, in other words, forcing them to either disappear or to exclude them from areas, hasn't been successful. So our lack of tolerance or our lack of acceptance of them to a certain degree has not served us well, and it's only helped the coyotes more. So it's probably better for us to understand how can we learn to work with them or live with them to a certain extent, recognizing, of course, that with coyotes and a lot of other animals, there will be times when they will conflict with us. So we have to figure out the best way to balance that the risk that they pose versus the benefits that they pose.
I mean, so I guess to me, like, why were we so hell-bent on getting rid of them? I mean, where has that conflict really come from? Because it's almost like we're viewing this animal as a pest, right? When, you know, right. And so I'm really wondering, what are some of the benefits of having them around? Because I'd love to be able to start changing this narrative a little bit, because we always think of the big bad wolf. You know, coyotes are not exactly as big bad wolf as we think in our minds, but they certainly have a negative connotation. And I'm struggling to understand why, because I understand, like, right, with small dogs,
right,
all of that, but why? Like, what's going on?
Right. It goes beyond that in terms of our animosity toward them, or in some cases our fear of them. It's something deep in our psyche, I think, and it's not restricted to just coyotes. I mean, we also feel the same way, or people feel the same way often about wolves, mountain lions, other carnivores, large bears. There's an inherent fear of these animals, and it probably goes way back to the point where we were prey to carnivores. There's theory out there that we co-evolved with predators way back in our beginning, and some level of that is still retained in us to some degree. I mean, we have a very strong fear of being eaten, for example. Not just being killed, but actually being eaten. That changes our equation altogether. And yeah, it's totally understandable. No one wants to be eaten. But that there's residuals of that, perhaps, in some of this, because that's so kind of the only way to explain some of our really strong negative feelings about animals that really don't have that much risk for us. And coyotes, fortunately for them, kind of fall into that category. And so you would think it'd be the opposite, because they're very dog-like. And so dogs are like the one animal that we're most close to and that we benefit from. You would think that coyotes would actually benefit from that close association with dogs, but they haven't yet. So the coyotes, I think, are changing our minds. So getting to where people are kind of changing or adjusting, it's kind of well known in the sociological realm is that communities that have had to live with large carnivores initially. Sorry, can you hear that?
Hey, large carnivores.
One of them's not very large. That one's not mine. So the communities that have to live with large carnivores with risk, initially they're very resistant to it because of the fear. But then over time, they come to adjust and they develop a degree of tolerance. So Scandinavian countries, those communities with wolves and brown bears have a different outlook in living with those predators than, say, us, where it's more recent. So there's a recency effect that there's an initial resistance, and then over time, people get a little bit more comfortable. Well, in the urban areas, in the cities, coyotes are actually forcing people to go through that process. So people are not doing it voluntarily, but they're becoming more tolerant. We can feel it and we can sense it in terms of our work. Again, we've been doing this work in Chicago for over 20 years. When we began our study, we had to do it in secret. We couldn't publicize it. We had to sneak around and, you know, we were doing it legally and with permits and everything, but we couldn't allow the public to know where we were working, because we were assuming that people would interfere with the research or perhaps even kill the animals if they could find them. So that was how we started. And now, of course, we publicize it all the time. And it's because of this shift in a lot of people's ideas in terms of, again, how much risk do these animals pose. But it's a natural progression that different societies have gone through, and now North American, at least the urban public, is now going through that in many cities. Their initial resistance to coyotes, but then now they're coming along and they're putting it in the right perspective. That doesn't mean that they don't always want to get rid of them. Sometimes they do, but they're way more tolerant now than they were 20 years ago.
So what are some of the ways that we as humans need to adapt to having these animals around? Like, and how can we do that in a kind of a, more of a proactive way than a reactive way?
Right. So the important things that we've noticed is the first thing is that people have to acknowledge that coyotes actually belong in cities or belong in different areas. In the beginning, the belief was that they don't belong there. They don't belong living near us. So therefore, they should be removed for their own benefit as much as for our own. Well, that was not right. That was incorrect. And so first is that realization that, okay, they're neighbors. Now it's a natural part of the urban landscape. So what do we have to do? So that's the first part, is that recognition. The second part is that we may have to adjust some of our behaviors to mitigate potential conflicts or to prevent them. And so the biggest thing is food. And so people need to really be conscious of what are they doing with potential food sources, not only for coyotes, but for other animals as well, but especially for coyotes. That's one of the biggest keys that we've seen anyway that leads to conflicts, is that once coyotes begin associating us with food, they begin losing their fear of us. And then that's kind of a slippery slope toward a conflict with us. So that's another thing. The third thing is managing pets responsibly. And that can be the hardest thing. So if you're a cat owner and you have cats outside, there's probably going to be the possibility that you may lose some to coyotes. And so the very first parts of the conflicts that we recognized, and was actually one of the reasons for beginning the study back in 2000, were cat owners complaining about their cats disappearing. And so coyotes were responsible for some of that, but not all of it. Dog owners, the main thing is understanding that if you're using green spaces like urban parks, if you know that coyotes also exist out there or live in that park, don't let dogs run off leash, especially during certain times of the year. Right now, or at least in this early winter period, we're in the middle of the mating season of coyotes. And so their hormone levels are at their highest levels, and they're the most defensive of their territories and especially their mates with respect to dogs. And so there's a higher level of conflict, and coyotes are less tolerant of dogs. So leaving them off leash during this time is a bit more of a problem than at other times of the year. The same thing would be true for spring when they have litters in the ground. They're extremely defensive of their litters, their pups.
I mean, as would any animal. I mean, any animal would be defensive of their young.
So exactly.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And coyotes are the best parents. I mean, they invest, again, both the male and the female, in often if they have subordinates, usually they're an older offspring. They all combine to help raise that litter. They are totally invested in that litter. It's pretty amazing. We've got great examples of even the mother, unfortunately, being killed or lost at some point after the pups are born. And the male, with help, will raise those pups without her. So it's pretty impressive. But again, that can be also a source of conflict when people's dogs encounter them. So that's part of it. And then, again, watching dogs, if they're out at night, again, keeping them close to home if necessary, if you know that if you're living next to a green space, that type of thing.
See, I just find this so fascinating because I think we have programmed ourselves to think that if we live in urban areas or slightly more urban areas, you know, in neighborhoods and things, that we can control nature, sort of. But I think there's always, at least I will just say for my personal opinion, nature always finds a way back in, right? I mean, we can lay down concrete, we can do whatever we want, and it still cracks. Nature finds its way back in. And the same goes for wildlife too. And so to me, we have this idea of these barriers that we've created in our societies against wildlife, but they're non-existent. And so we need to have more of these conversations, and we need to figure out how to adapt. And to kind of transition into more of your research too on this point, is how have the objectives for these projects changed and expanded as you've learned more about these animals and kind of understanding that they don't, wildlife doesn't, you know, doesn't see country lines, neighborhood lines. Like, how have some of your objectives changed and been shaped for the future with that in mind?
Sure. Well, the objectives have changed or expanded, I think is a better way to put it, as you put it, with the increasing years. And so one of the many ways is that we've been able to begin to look at the potential benefits that coyotes present to the urban ecosystem, as well as other systems also. So it turns out that our project is very typical of most projects of mammalian carnivores, predators, in that you get the funding through the conflict. So the conflict pays for the research. There's very little research dollars devoted toward exploring the ecological roles of these animals or the potential benefits that they present to us. It's always, how do we control their damage or their conflicts? And so that was true for, and is still true for our project. It's still the underlying goal is to mitigate conflict. But that ignores the fact that these animals are often doing many things out there that we are unaware of, and many of them may actually benefit us. And so we've been exploring that with coyotes when we can. We've been very fortunate that our funding agencies give us leeway to explore some of these questions so we can do it ethically. And so we've been doing that. So we've looked at the role that coyotes play on the Canada goose population, that here in the Midwest and in the East, Canada geese no longer become migratory, so they become resident populations in cities. They present their own problems. Turns out that just by pure serendipity, there's many, many stories behind this, but we accidentally found that coyotes do play a role in controlling the goose population, at least in Chicago. So they are the only animals in the urban system that can successfully depredate a goose nest. I mean, Canada geese they're also really good parents. they will beat people up if you ever come.
Oh, yes. Nest. Oh, yes. I am familiar. I'm so scared of geese. They are like so territorial and so defensive and probably wonderful creatures. But yeah, it's true. And they're everywhere, you know?
Right. They're everywhere. And so, in fact, that's where the conflicts of geese and people become kind of the most prevalent, is when they're nesting and they become defensive of their nests. So it turns out that coyotes in our system would wipe out about half of all goose nests. We monitored about 2,000 goose nests, and they would come out, and we documented all kinds of really amazing behaviors. Like, they would actually cache the eggs. So goose eggs are actually pretty large size. They're like a Big Mac, and in fact, they're packaged and everything, so a coyote can pick it and take it away. But we would notice that they would totally wipe out the whole nest of all these eggs overnight, and it's like, how are they eating all these things? And just again, by accident, one of my grad students discovered that they were burying them and they were putting them into the ground. And then they would come back over the next few days or weeks and continue to eat eggs even after the geese were done nesting. So, but the important thing was that this whole effect that they were having, it's taking place among 9 million people. That's the population in the Chicago metro area. And no one had seen it before. I mean, no one had documented it. And in fact, it took us 3 years to be able to develop the technology, the special cameras that we could fit on the nests that would allow us to document whether or not coyotes were really doing this. And so that's an example of a process that they're involved in that we're benefiting from. It's taking place right in our backyards, and no one even notices it.
Well, and it's that whole thing again of you're learning as this study is evolving. And I mean, at first, you don't even necessarily know what you should even be looking for because you don't know that it exists, you know what I mean? Or that it's happening. So I am so fascinated to hear about all of the things that you continue to learn about these animals, because clearly we don't know. I mean, we know a decent amount, but not enough. And so again, thank you for sharing. And do you have, because again, this is our capsule episode, do you have one nugget of information that you'd like to leave our listeners with today on maybe how we can start evolving to live with these animals?
Well, so this capsule, I've thought about it, and this is a little bit biased toward the carnivores or the predators, but not completely, because it also could apply to other wildlife as well. That as we're successful with our conservation efforts, it may be really important that we also evolve in terms of our tolerance toward the potential conflicts that we may have with these animals. So tolerance is, I think, an important capsule. And that doesn't mean that we have to just throw up our hands and let the animals take advantage of us, although that's not really what they do. But there, we can acknowledge that there's going to be conflicts occasionally, and we have to figure out ways to prevent it as much as possible or ways to address it when it does happen. But the biggest thing is to allow these animals to do what they do and to recognize that, again, with successful conservation, there may be our increased coexistence with these animals.
I love that. I love that. Thank you so much. For all of the people listening, how can people learn more, stay up to date on what you're doing, and, you know, potentially get involved or just keep track of what's going on here?
So with regard to our work, if they're curious about more of the things that we've been talking about, so we do have a book that just came out recently, and so that's called Coyotes Among Us. And so that's where I've summarized the 20 plus years of our research and many of the subjects that we've just talked about covered in that book. There's also amazing photographs in there by the National Geographic photographers that we worked with in the past. And really, the pictures tell probably the better story than the text. So there's plenty of pictures in there. And then we have a website that we spend a lot of time, again, trying to convey the information that we have, as well as it's a repository for our publications. And that website is called urbancoyoteresearch.com. So those are two avenues for learning more about our research. But as far as coyotes in your area or different parts of the country, there's almost always, well, there's an increasing number of urban coyote studies in various cities. So I would encourage you to Google your site and see who is doing work with coyotes in your area. Atlanta, Minneapolis, Denver, Los Angeles, Portland, Oregon. They've all got active or have had active coyote projects going on in their areas.
Wonderful. We're going to have to check it out. Well, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure getting to know you and getting to learn about all of the incredible work that you do. And I know that we will be checking back in with you as things evolve and as you discover tons of new things about the incredible coyotes.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun talking about this.
Want to learn more about Stan's work? Use the code VOICES20 on IndiePubs for 20% off Stan's new book, Coyotes Among Us. You can also use the discount link provided in the episode description wherever you're listening to this podcast. Thanks for listening to today's episode. Find us on social media through the Wild Foundation or through our website, wild.org. And hey, if you're feeling inspired, don't hesitate to share this podcast with those around you. And maybe even rate us on whichever platform you listen to your podcasts. We appreciate the support more than you know, and it's that support that allows our work to continue and evolve.